All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Good afternoon, Canucks fans, and welcome back to another episode of Canucks Conversation. As always, brought to you by the 2024 Toyota BZ4X. The BZ4X is Toyota's brand new all-electric SUV that is designed to go the distance for you and your family. The BZ4X is packed with Toyota's coolest tech, but it still has that trusty SUV feel you know and love. And even though it's electric, it's capable of effortlessly conquering any terrain, whether it's rain, snow, mud, or your friend's questionable post-game recaps. The BZ4X will get you through it all. And of course, we're coming to you from the iconic Wall Center in downtown Vancouver. Looking for your next meeting space? Contact the Wall Center for all your event needs at sales@wallcenter.com. David Quadrelli back in the saddle alongside Harmon Dial. I saw, and look, we appreciate Irfan Ghaffar filled in for me on Friday. You guys did an excellent job. It was a great show. I got to make a quick trip to Bali, which is obviously where I go every time I don't do a show. He calls it the BZ4X.
I've been meaning.
Did you notice that?
I've noticed, and I've wanted to bring it up and be like, "Oh, you're a Z over Z type guy," but we always transition the topic so quickly. We actually get on the rails and discuss the Canucks so quickly.
See, we start when I'm hosting. You and I always start with the hard hitting questions, like, "Is it Z or Z?" And it's Z. But it's here's the thing. The BZ4X is available in the United States, obviously, right? Yeah. And down there, it's the BZ4X. Like, if we ask Frank Saravalli to read that, he's given us the old BZ4X, him and Irf. I think BZ4X sounds a lot better than Z. I'll just say it.
I don't even care about what country says it what way. I just think Z sounds better.
Z does sound better, absolutely. And it especially sounds better with the BZ4X.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if the partner's going to like this, but I'd much rather drive the BZ4X than the BZ4X.
100%.
What are you driving? The BZ4X.
It sounds luxurious.
It sounds luxurious. Oh, look at you go. Look at that. Harmon Dial, ladies and gentlemen. How was your weekend?
It was awesome. Not just the sun, but also Canucks beating Edmonton, right? You get
a lot of Canucks fans
exhaling. And man, I don't think I would have wanted to come here on Monday talking about an Edmonton victory and, oh boy, they're going to steal the division. That would have been a dark, dark timeline.
It would have been a bad one to go down, but we're going to go down a different timeline because we're now going to talk about that game on Saturday where the Vancouver Canucks took down the Edmonton Oilers. Oilers on home ice. Yes, they were without Connor McDavid, but a solid performance from the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah, and it's interesting because through the first 15 minutes, it was all Edmonton.
Yep.
Seriously, they were dominating play. They, of course, got an early power play. This is where Casey DeSmith deserves a ton of credit for keeping it even until the Canucks could find their legs in the final 5 minutes of the first period. And from the final 5 minutes of the first period onward, it was basically all Canucks. I mean, you look at that 5 minute stretch eventually leading to Sam Lafferty's 1-0 goal. It started with Besser with a glorious chance. Remember that bank pass play
from
by
Miller.
Phil Hronek.
Oh, it was Hronek that threw.
Hronek made the bank pass, yes. And then Miller set Besser up.
Gotcha.
After picking up the loose puck, that was a glorious chance. Bluger had a good look. Mikheyev was later robbed by Skinner after a Bluger setup. Joshua had a great chance off the rush from Garland, and then Lafferty with, you know, about 30 seconds or less left in the first period, able to chip in with some secondary scoring. I mean, you look at that game, it's Lafferty and it's Suter, two guys that the Canucks haven't gotten a lot of production from in the second half, yet both guys were really productive in the first half, right? So that was massive. And I mean, on that play too, you saw Darnell Nurse backing up, giving him so much space. That's one of Edmonton's potential weaknesses is
Darnell Nurse
defensively at times off the rush can be sus. And I think that's one of the breakdowns that the Canucks capitalized on. But really from that moment onward, once Casey DeSmith gave them a chance to find their legs, then the Canucks really started to control, to dictate. And once they gained the lead, it really felt like it was pretty calm. And yeah, Edmonton had some looks here or there. They're inevitably going to push, but the game felt like it was firmly in control once the Canucks gained the lead.
Couple things there, and we're going to talk about the Canucks' ability to protect leads. And I want to ask you kind of what the numbers say, like with score effects and everything, how the Canucks have done at defending leads and all that. And we'll get to that in a second. But I did want to start with Casey DeSmith, who you pointed out rock solid in those first 15 minutes. I said it on the night that he was the first star of the first period. I think you can extend that, maybe not first star, but you can extend that to the game, because ultimately what the Canucks weren't getting since Thatcher Demko has been down and what they've gotten so often with Thatcher Demko healthy for years now is Thatcher Demko holding down the fort early when maybe the Canucks don't have their legs right away, or maybe they just not even don't have their legs. Just maybe the opponent is coming out a lot stronger than they are. It happens sometimes. Thatcher Demko has been able to hold down the fort, and we've seen this from the Canucks end as well, where they pour on all the pressure, can't score, and then the opponent gets all the momentum. Casey DeSmith gave the Canucks a chance to come back in that game, and really not even come back. He didn't give up a goal. He didn't give up a goal in that first period, so he gave them a chance to enter the second period with a lead. Obviously, Sam Lafferty's goal coming in the dying seconds of the first period. That's massive, and that's something that they just haven't gotten since Thatcher Demko went down. We've got news on Demko. Looks like he's going to start, confirmed actually by Rick Tocchet. He's going to start tomorrow when the Calgary Flames visit town. But I really wanted to shout out Casey DeSmith because, look, even on this podcast, there was a lot of conversation about how DeSmith's play wasn't very inspiring and how if he's not going to give you wins, if he's not going to play well, go ahead and get Archer Shelovs in there because you have to see what you have in Shelovs. There was a lot of that. And it wasn't really so much about DeSmith's not a good goalie. It was more about, okay, he's not giving you wins right now. How much is the immediate drop off of getting Shelovs in there? We argued last week, probably not so much, but really nice to see for Casey DeSmith to kind of come out. I didn't want to say quiet the noise. There was no real noise, but for him to come out, have a performance like that and remind everybody that he is the goaltender that we've seen for most of this year, the really steady, reliable backup who you can trust putting in goal on any given night.
Yeah, a couple things stood out in that first period. Number one was on the first Edmonton power play, which they had about a minute in after JT Miller's tripping penalty. You could tell right away, DeSmith had a great save on Drysdale on a backdoor one-timer play. It didn't look from a surface level like, oh, what an unbelievable save. And I'll tell you why, because DeSmith does a lot of pre-scout work, and especially without McDavid out, I can tell you he knew that Drysdale on that back door, that Edmonton's going to be looking for that play. So the anticipation was lightning quick for him to get over on that side and make a difficult save look routine, look easy. And I remember the second game of the season, which was also in Edmonton, DeSmith made a bunch of those backdoor one-timer saves on Drysdale, which is such a lethal weapon on that Edmonton power. And he told me well in advance that when Demko started the first game of the season, he kept noticing that Edmonton was trying to feed that play, and how he made sure to be dialed in. And yeah, if the play is on one side of the ice, you have to be square to that. You have to read what's in front of you, but you also have to sort of keep your eye also on the settle. So I thought that was important on that early power play. And then also just not leaving any bad rebounds, right? That I think was massive. There was an Evan Bouchard bomb from the point, for example, which DeSmith not only saved, but he completely smothered. There was nothing, no loose change around the net for a guy like Zach Hyman, who's scored 53 goals because of the havoc that he creates around the blue paint. There's nothing there for a guy like Hyman or a guy like Corey Perry, who's always creating havoc around the front of the net as well.
You guys had Kevin Woodley on Friday, and something that Kevin pointed out on Saturday was that DeSmith was spending a lot of time during these stretches where he wasn't playing. He was spending a lot of time last week with Ian Clark late after practice. And one thing that we spoke about with DeSmith was him coming out of his own a little bit, coming out of the crease a little too much, being a little, I won't say anticipating too much, but I would say not letting the play come to him. That results in rebounds. That results in pushing off your right foot to face someone on your left and thinking they're going to shoot and just anticipating they're going to shoot. So you're 10 feet outside your crease and then they just pass it around and you're nowhere to be found. He did a really good job not only anticipating, but not over anticipating, if that makes sense. Yeah. That's something I really noticed in his game. And it was something I criticized last week, was just that Silov's post play was so strong, where he was just like, okay, I'm anchored to this post. Now I have a pass across. I'm going to anchor to the other post. That was really good from Silov's. With DeSmith, it kind of slipped up a little bit. And last on Saturday, I thought he did a really good job of cleaning that up. And again, a guy puts in the work after practice and all of a sudden he looks a lot better. And I'm not saying DeSmith wasn't working before, but you get what I'm saying. The extra work with Ian Clark was pointed out by Kevin. And I just wanted to make sure that we talk about it. Okay, anything else that you wanted to say about DeSmith? I guess the DeSmith story, I don't want to say comes to an end, but Thatcher Demko is starting tomorrow.
Yeah.
Thatcher Demko is also probably going to start on Thursday against the Winnipeg Jets. I would think you want to get them both of those starts. Then it's playoffs. Like, this is the last week of shows before playoffs start. Like, the next Monday, when we have our next Monday show, we go 5 days a week in case you're new here. Next Monday, we don't know the schedule yet, so I don't think we'll be talking about... Well, we will be talking about a playoff game. We just don't know if it'll have happened yet or if we're going to be previewing that game. But playoffs are here. Like, playoffs are here. And we're here to get you geared up. The CA playoff shirt. We have an army. Nation Gear is ready to gear you up for Vancouver's playoff run. Rep your favorite team as they battle for the cup. Shop the exclusive We Have an Army playoff tee and more at nationgear.ca. That was one of the smoothest transitions to an ad read I've ever done. I wasn't even planning.
I'm proud of you.
Thank you. Okay. Did you want to get to anything else from that game? I thought the one thing I wanted to talk about, and actually I wanted to ask you about the score effects and how the Canucks are at defending leads. But the one thing I wanted to point out, you pointed out secondary scoring. They're going to need that in the playoffs. The Vancouver Canucks beat the Edmonton Oilers on a night where Quinn Hughes, Elias Pettersson, Brock Besser, Philip Hronek, whoever you want, got 0 points. JT Miller was the only of the top five scorers on the team that got a point, and he picked up an assist. Like, that matters, and that's going to matter a ton in the playoffs if you can get that secondary scoring.
Yeah, and it's not as if they were threatening either, which from time to time happens in the playoffs. The other team will typically have a top-notch checking line that they can smother your top players, and Miller, Pettersson, Besser combined for just 2 shots on goal in that game. So it's not as if they were buzzing and creating a lot of momentum either. So absolutely, depth scoring was huge in that one. Also, Vancouver's third line shutting the Drysdale line down to make sure that, okay, our top guys aren't going, but we need to then make sure that their top guys aren't going either. And from that perspective, first, Tocchet deserves credit for putting that line together, recognizing that, okay, we're not going to have last change in Edmonton, which means that Chris Knobloch could try to get the Drysdale line out against some of either your third or fourth line. So you want to make sure that your lineup is deeper, particularly middle six.
How different is that line? What you're talking about is Joshua, Lindholm, Garland.
Yeah.
How different does that matchup and that game look if Chris Knobloch is able to say, oh, you've got Ilya Mikheyev, Pia Suter, and Nils Amon on a line. That's the line I want to match up against. And not even Suter, like Bluger, for example.
Yeah.
Just whoever. You get what I'm saying.
Absolutely. And this is where not only did they have 7-13 head-to-head against Drysdale, in which there were zero goals against. Edmonton sure had a narrow edge in shot attempts in those minutes, but 5-5, dead even in scoring chances. So really impressively held their own. But because of that, their overall usage was spiked as well. Garland, Lindholm, and Joshua were all top three among Canucks forwards in 5-on-5 ice time. They were a go-to line, and I mean, Garland had 7 shots in that game.
Yeah.
Was terrific from that perspective. So I think their overall underlying numbers in that game weren't, like, we're used to them controlling like 60% of expected goals and just ruthlessly dominating the opposition's third line. Their overall underlying numbers weren't the best, but that's because they got the Drysdale matchup and ultimately still found a way to keep them off the scoreboard, which was essential for winning that game.
Okay, we got a lot in the YouTube live chat. And in case you're new here, because we do have some new people, I think. Anyone Else is our segment where we're going to take all of your listener questions, and then our clip guy, Jacob, is going to take all those, put them out of context on social media, and then everybody's going to rip us for randomly talking about things. No, I can't. Jacob's a good guy. I'm just joking around. But yeah, that's our segment later. So there's a lot of good interaction in the YouTube live chat. I wanted to get this one in. This is from Captain Canuck, regular listener of the show. Can we talk about Soucy putting Kane on his back like a little cuss word in there for an entire segment, please? I don't think we're going to talk about it for an entire segment, but man, Soucy's impact, no matter where it's coming from, Soucy matters a lot to this team.
Oh yeah. I also love his reaction after the hit when Evander wanted to drop the glove.
Yeah.
And laughing just in, his face.
Oh dude, you know what? You know what that reminds me of is Jarkko Ruutu and Dion Phaneuf. When Dion Phaneuf goes to drop the gloves and trips, you can't look tough in that situation. A clean hit, you're like, let's drop him, and the guy's laughing in your face. Come on. And like, it reminds me of Zadorov. And again, Zadorov, I thought Zadorov had a good game. That was highlighted in the statsies by Mike Liu, our analytics-based post-game report at Canucks Army. The Ian Cole, Nikita Zadorov pairing deserves a ton of love for their performance in that game. They were really good. And for all the conversations we've had about Ian Cole later in this season, about how his play has slipped from the start of the year, I thought he was good. And again, him and Zadorov together were a great pairing. But the reason I bring up Zadorov is because I just remember that night. I can't remember who they were playing, where nobody was going to touch Zadorov, and Zadorov knew that. So he was not taking runs at guys, but he was finishing checks. And then like a guy would come up to him after the whistle, and Zadorov would be looking down at him and just say like, what are you going to do? Like, what are you going to do? And then they would just skate away because the answer was nothing.
Yeah, I remember a game when he was on Calgary just before the trade against Toronto. He blew somebody up in the neutral zone. And I think it was like David Kamp sort of went up to him because you sort of feel obligated to, like, check.
You have to skate over.
You have to skate over and do something. And it's just like Zadorov sees Kamp coming, just shrugs his shoulders. Kamp does a half-hearted cross check that barely touches Zadorov. And Zadorov's just waiting there for Kamp to do something else. And Kamp just skates away. Zadorov the whole time knows that it's like he was waiting for Kamp to do something, yet knew nothing was actually coming. It was sort of like bored.
Yeah, I'm excited for playoffs, man. We've said it before. We're going to keep saying it all throughout this week. I'm very excited for the playoffs. And hey, like, we'll talk about it tomorrow. We're going to preview tomorrow's game against the Calgary Flames, but tomorrow is fan appreciation night. So we're going to talk about the team awards, because that's when those get handed out. We're going to talk about who should get each team award. And I'll be honest, going off the cuff here, haven't done a ton of prep, but it's a vibe. Those are vibes awards, thankfully.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm set.
Also, for tonight, for Canucks fans to watch, out of town scoreboard.
Yes.
Nashville is playing tonight, their final game of the regular season. If they win, that basically locks Vancouver-Nashville in as a first-round matchup, which, of course, would be more favorable. The only way the Canucks end up playing Vegas, I believe, is if Nashville loses and then Vegas wins their next two games, which are against softer opponents. It's against Chicago and Anaheim. But looks like it's Nashville, and if they win tonight, that basically locks that in.
Playoff travel. the one place you said was going to be very difficult for you to get to.
It is what it is.
It's playoff hockey. And Nashville's a great place to go.
Yeah.
Great place to
go. I mean, let's be honest. Vegas in round one, especially when they get Mark Stone back, would
and at least
have
it's
been
not
a
LA.
Really, really tough matchup.
And at least it's not the boring LA Kings. Yeah, hopefully it is Nashville. We've been saying that for a while. But again, you don't wish for a playoff opponent. You take whoever you get, and you're confident that your team can roll through them. Speaking of rolling through them, not the best transition, but I got to tell you about another one of our sponsors, and that is our friends at Four Winds Brewing. More specifically, Juxtapose IPA. Looking for something hoppy for your fridge this weekend? We recommend you check out the Four Winds Juxtapose IPA, a two-time silver medal winner at the World Beer Cup. This juicy IPA is tropical and funky at the same time. Available at liquor stores across the province or for home delivery anywhere in BC through the online shop at fourwindsbrewing.ca. Anywhere in BC, anywhere. But they are locally owned and operated in Delta, BC. You can check out their tap room on River Road in Delta. Go to fourwindsbrewing.ca. Look at that can. Juxtapose. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful can.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
The Out of Town Scoreboard. Yeah, you got to that. Was there anything else that we needed to get to before we get to this team award segment?
Don't think so.
Okay, then let's get to that. Let's get to our segment about the Canucks team awards. And it is brought to you by the Wendy's Daily Faceoff Survivor Pool game. The only thing sweeter than the taste of victory is starting your day with the new Cinnabon Pull Apart from Wendy's, but there's no reason you can't have both, because Wendy's and Daily Faceoff Survivor Pool are giving you a chance to win weekly prizes all season long. And hey, even if you make a few wrong picks, at least you know heading to Wendy's right now for a $5 Cinnabon Pull Apart and small coffee is a great choice. Sign up for Daily Faceoff Survivor Pool Fantasy today, sponsored by Wendy's and the Wendy's app. I haven't made my picks yet. I'd assume this is the last week, but hey, maybe they'll have it for the playoffs. I hope we have it for the playoffs. That'd be awesome. Give me another week to go win a free Baconator. Man, you see this new French onion burger?
No, I haven't.
Oh my gosh, it looks awesome. I mean, I got to go try. I'm a big French onion guy. I didn't realize it till recently, but I'm a big French onion guy. You know who makes a really good French onion soup? Mr. Chris Faber.
Really?
Oh, and yeah, he deserves a shout out for this, because I've seen that dude's process. That's like he like caramelizes his onions for like 8 hours. Or something like that.
Wow, that's commitment.
It's okay, so inside baseball, when we used to do the show in Chris's apartment, there was one time where I got there like an hour before the show, and he's like in his Pikachu pajamas at the stove mixing his onions. And I was like, oh, what are you cooking? And he goes, yeah, they need about 6 more hours. And it's just on low. He just had it on low. And then we went and did the show. And then he came out, stirred them.
That's awesome.
That's so
cool.
I
will never have that level of dedication to cooking.
No.
Never.
No. Although, you know, have you ever like slow roasted anything?
No.
Yeah, me neither. But it sounds cool.
See,
I've eaten slow roasted stuff. It's good.
This is bad, but the way I look at cooking is like, I hate to put, let's say, more than 30 to 40 minutes of prep into a meal, because I'm like, it's poor efficiency if I spend, let's say, an hour or two making something, if I'm just going to gobble it up and eat it and less than 10 minutes.
This is the most 20-year-old conversation we've ever had, and I love it. I'm the exact same way. Although, like, I like cooking. I do like cooking, and I was getting really good at it. Really good. And now what I do is I try to make stuff that can be frozen, and then I can, like, put it in the microwave, and it's cooked.
True, yeah.
You know, like, that stuff.
That's a life
hack. To me is good. And I got a few. I'll send them to you. You take, like, an hour on a Sunday afternoon, wherever you're watching baseball, whatever you want to do, and then you freeze them. And they're good to go. You could do a lot
air
of stuff.
Air fryers are
great.
So amazing.
How did we get on this topic? Oh yeah, the caramelized onion burger, which I didn't even tell you about. The French onion burger over at Wendy's. It's legitimately, it looks really good. There's like crispy onions and then there's caramelized onions as well. Yeah, looks really good. I'm going to be sure to go check that out. Okay, Canucks team awards are going to be handed out tomorrow, which is the Canucks' last home game. It is also their fan appreciation night, which is where they hand out their team awards every year. Harm, I wrote about this for Canucks Army, but I went back and looked at the history of the team awards, like who won the unsung hero, all that. I got to find it because it was a really, I don't know, pat on my back. It was a really good article. It was really good. I went back and found a bunch of stuff about, you know, how Eddie Lack is the only goalie to win the unsung hero award.
Interesting.
Could Casey DeSmith win it this year? I think he could, because I think everybody else that's been unsung has been sung too much.
I get what you're saying, but no, I don't think so.
You don't think so?
I
don't know if I'm voting close, but he made a really good case to be the unsung hero for this team on Saturday night.
Yeah, but he's got an 896 save percentage. It.
That's true. Okay.
And his record's 12-9-6. That's not great.
Okay, what do you think Eddie Lack's record or save percentage was in the season he won the award?
I'll say 915.
Casey Smith's in trouble because it was a 921.
Wow.
That's real high.
NHL save percentages were naturally higher.
Not Eddie Lack. It was 901 the next season.
No, I mean like league average.
Saying. Yeah,
right.
I know what you're saying.
But even adjusting for that.
Sorry, Eddie Lack. That was a mean little dig I took. But okay. So okay, where do you want to start? Because I mean,
put it this way. Like two or three days ago, we were talking about, oh yeah, Shelov deserves more rope.
Sure.
And people were asking. And we shot it down, of course, but people were wondering, oh, if something were to ever knock on what happened to
Demko in the playoffs,
Oh, is there a debate between Shelovs and DeSmith, right? So I don't think that DeSmith has a strong enough case based on the season for unsung hero, even though overall he's been a solid addition.
Okay, I need to find this. Sorry. I did something. Like I wrote about this, I swear. Okay, last year, I'm just going to remind everybody. Quinn Hughes was named best defenseman. We're going to skip that one.
Yeah.
Because he's going to win best defenseman again. I don't know, though. No. Yeah. Quinn Hughes is going to win best defenseman. He's going to win it every single year, just like he's going to keep breaking his own points record every single year that he's a Canucks. Every single season that he's a Canuck, which I just think is the best. Like, it's just so funny that Quinn Hughes is going to lead this franchise in scoring by the time he's like 26, 27.
Pretty amazing. And that award is going to be need to... for best defenseman is going to need to be renamed after Quinn.
The Quinn Hughes Most Outstanding Defenseman Award. That's amazing. Maybe they should do
that before he even retires.
Oh.
Honestly, if he gets, how many of them has he won in a row?
He's about to get his fourth. He's won it 3 years in a row. He's played three full seasons with the Canucks.
If he gets a 10 straight, you got to rename the award, even if he's still an active player.
Do you think he'll win 10 straight?
As long as he's still here, yeah.
Okay, wait. No, excuse me. He's about to win his fifth in a row. 1, 2, 3, 4. He's about to win his fifth. He's already at 4. So he's about to win his fifth team award.
Yeah, if he gets 10 straight, just rename it after him.
I love that. I wonder how many... Oh, wait. I guess that's not how it really worked. Because I did the research on this. It's named after... I just closed it. Who's it named after again? The team award for best defenseman?
Babe Pratt? No.
No, that's MVP, I think.
Cyclone Taylor?
No.
Grady was right. So Walter Babe Pratt. The Walter Babe Pratt trophy is for best defenseman. I wonder how many that guy would have won.
All right, let's see. You're Googling it right now.
This whole segment is just going off the rails. Okay, so Walter Babe Pratt. Someone needs to explain to me, one of our older listeners, someone needs to explain to me why? Oh, no, never mind. Okay. Yeah, maybe he would have won it. He put up 57 points in 50 games with the Toronto Maple Leafs in 1943-44. Hard to argue with that.
Yeah. Was that right after? I don't want to embarrass myself. Was that right after, like, when was World War II again?
Did they play through World War II? No. No, World War II, that was when World War II was. Wow, how did we get down this road?
Yeah, that was in the middle of World War II.
Did the NHL play through World War II? They did.
I think so. Yeah. I don't think the league didn't completely shut down.
Didn't Major League Baseball?
Why are you asking me a baseball question?
I just thought, okay, so I assumed that all of the leagues just stopped during World War II.
No, that was not my impression.
Okay, so some NHLers have had, and this is a really cool, I love NHL and just history in general like this, but like, I looked it up, 500 men left MLB teams to serve in the military. And you seen the movie A League of Their Own?
No.
Tom Hanks?
I haven't seen it.
It's about the Women's Baseball League, the Women's Pro Baseball League that came up during World War II. Really good movie. You should watch it. You'd really like it. It's a good movie. Yeah. Baseball movies are great. I don't know how we're going to go back to a team awards segment, but yeah. Okay, so it should be renamed the Quinn Hughes Best Defenseman Award, but I digress. Pavel Bure Award for Most Exciting Player, that went to Andrei Kuzmenko. Unsung Hero, the Fred J. Hume Award, went to Dakota Joshua last year. He's too sung now. I don't think he can win that award. I don't think Connor Garland can win Unsung Hero. Who gets Unsung Hero?
I'll give you one. I don't think he's not going to win, but that's actually kind of the point. And it actually amplifies the notion or case that he's been a little bit under the radar. I lean towards Pia Suter.
Pia Suter?
Because think about it. If he'd stayed healthy for all 82 games, he's played 65 so far, scoring at a 17-goal, 35-point pace, right? He's played wing, he's played center, he's played everywhere in the lineup, basically. He's also got the lowest goals against rate at 5-on-5 among all Canucks forwards at 1.53. So defensively, his metrics have been elite. The Canucks have outscored opponents 38-20 with him on the ice at 5-on-5, and he makes $1.6 million.
That's a good pick.
Plus, he's not a guy that night in, night out, people are like, oh, look at Pia Suter, the way people are lavishing the praise on Garland and Joshua now, for example.
I'm saying Nils Höglander or Casey Smith are my pick. But I like your Pia Suter pick. I do. Who wins the award? Because I'm going to say Connor Garland wins the fan voting award.
I think Garland will win the fan vote.
But he's too sung. I'll say it. He's too sung.
Maybe.
I think it's going to Connor Garland. Hasn't Dakota... I got to look this up. Yeah, okay. So here's some names who have won the Unsung Hero Award. Luke Shen. This is in order. Going backwards. Luke Shen, Tyler Mott, JT Miller in his first season as a Canuck.
Oh my goodness.
Antoine Roussel, Derek Dorsett, Marcus Granlund, and Yannick Hansen. Yannick Hansen has won the award more than anyone else. He's won it three times. Three times. Yeah, he's won it three times.
It's cool stuff. For a defenseman, if we were talking defenseman, it's too bad Susie didn't stay healthy for more games. Otherwise, he'd be in the conversation too.
Yep. Okay, if Joshua wins the award this year, he's going to become the fifth Canucks player to win the award in back-to-back seasons. I'll tell you the other ones. Hilliard Graves, Rich Sutter, Steve Bozek, Martin Gelinas, and Yannick Hansen, who has won the award three times.
I didn't know the first three names.
So I do, because I wrote this article, but also, I say it again, Daniel Wagner's book has taught me a bunch of stuff about, like, the early 70s, early 80s Canucks teams that I would not have otherwise known.
That's awesome.
It's a good book. It's a really, really good book. And I know you and I, we talk about reading a lot. Well, not a lot, but we talk about reading. We both read. So yeah, it's a good book. It's a good book. I'll say it again. Okay, this is going off the rails. Let's try to reset this here. Your most exciting player pick is Pia Suter. Mine, Casey DeSmith. I'm sticking with Casey DeSmith. Casey DeSmith needs some love. Ahead of the playoffs. Okay, Cyclone Taylor.
I thought you were making a joke.
No, Cyclone Taylor Trophy for most valuable player. I think that's going to JT Miller.
It could go to him. I think it's defensible. I would go towards Quinn for most exciting, but JT is a defensible pick.
It's not most exciting. It's most valuable. Most valuable player.
MVP?
Yeah,
I misheard that.
Cyclone Taylor Trophy, most valuable player. I think my pick, like, I didn't vote on this, but if I did, Quinn Hughes. Quinn Hughes seems MVP. But I don't think he's going to win. I'm trying to guess who's going to win the fan vote. I think JT Miller's been so electric that he's going to win the fan vote.
No, I think people may give JT most exciting.
That's what I have him as. I have him written down as most exciting.
And that's fair. I think that's defensible. But I think because you can give JT most exciting, that fans won't feel the need to then also have him MVP when Quinn Hughes has clearly been MVP.
I like that. This will be the first season, if my research is correct, this will be the first season since he became a Vancouver Canuck that Elias Pettersson will not win a team award.
Wow.
Makes sense. I mean, he can't win Unsung Hero. He can't win Best Defenseman. So it's either MVP or Most Exciting Player. I say JT Miller is going to get Most Exciting. I think Quinn Hughes should get MVP. MVP should go, it's going to go, I will say, to Quinn Hughes, Thatcher Demko, or JT Miller. It's one of those three.
Yeah, it should be Quinn.
Should be Quinn.
I'd like to see a Most Improved Player award, too.
Who gets Most Improved in your mind?
Hoglander.
Yep. Was trying to think of another name, and I can't. Nils Hoglander is this team's Most Improved Player.
Yeah, and a guy like that deserves a lot of love, given how he was in Abbotsford this time last year.
What's the opposite of Most Improved? The, like, biggest drop-off.
The Andre Kuzmenko Regression Award.
It goes to Ilya Mikheyev, right? Let's be nice. Let's be nice to Ilya Mikheyev.
Yeah.
You know what?
Tough.
It's so unfortunate. He got robbed by Stuart Skinner. Like,
but also, there needs to be, like, you know how we have conversion rates for currencies?
Yes.
There needs to be a conversion rate for Ilya Mikheyev's scoring chances, because one scoring chance for Ilya Mikheyev is not equivalent to one scoring chance for another Canucks forward.
Oh,
it's like,
gosh.
You need three to four Mikheyev scoring chances to equal, like, one scoring chance from, like, Nils Hoglander or any other top six player.
There's some good interaction in the YouTube live chat. People are agreeing that it's Hughes by a mile for MVP. I still wonder, I wonder if JT Miller will win the award, but it looks like we have a lot of fans in the YouTube
live
chat.
I'd be shocked if Miller gets MVP. Shocked.
A lot of fans. Well, I just see it so much on Twitter, right? Like, I see it so much. People
talking about Miller. That's the vocal minority, though.
That's fair. I think it's going to be Hughes. That's my pick, and I also think that's what the fans are ultimately going to vote. I'd be curious if Miller gets one. I wouldn't be surprised, is what I should say. Captain Canuck robbed about Mikheyev, what I brought up. Dude, quads. He shot it right at his glove. Skinner literally didn't move. That's a one way to look at it. Skinner lifted his hand. Like, yeah, Mikheyev probably could have done better to finish it off. But
it was a 5-star scoring chance. I felt bad for Teddy Bluger because
he didn't shoot it into his crest. It's not like he came within like a foot and shot it right into his crest. Yeah. He had to move his hand. Although maybe not as much as he should have had to. All right. Let's get to... do we have any other team awards to hand out? Did we do them all? Oh, Most Exciting Player. I already said JT Miller. You agree?
I think it's Quinn, but JT is defensible. Like, I won't argue against anybody who says JT because he's had electric moments this year. The chant, by the way, I love when Al Murdoch does the announcement for JT Miller.
JT!
And then the entire Rogers Arena crowd is following along with him, chanting as well. It's awesome. And he's had some signature moments, like the Boston game where 2AB scoring, sending up plays, throwing the body in the forecheck. He, like, put it this way, if he wins Most Exciting, I think it's well-deserved, even though I think Quinn could also... you could also make a case for him, but he's going to sweep all the other awards besides Unsung Hero. So I can understand why Canucks fans will at least want to give somebody other than Hughes some love, too.
Okay, let's close out this segment. Exhilarating segment, if I do say so myself. We started talking about Walter Babe Pratt's
World War II.
I got to figure this out because I didn't actually figure it out. I just saw that he played for the New Westminster Royals. I'm trying to figure out. Like, so he played for the New Westminster Royals from 1948 to 1951. And obviously that's a storied franchise. And then he coached them and they won a championship in 1949-1950 with him as the head coach.
Wait, he was also playing though.
Yeah, he played in the NHL.
No. Like,
wait. Oh, he was a player coach. Wait, what?
Yeah.
Dude, they should have a player coach award and give it to JT every year.
And he was lining it up to 18 goals and 66 points in 63 games.
Yo, this is
And they won
awesome.
A championship that year.
I can't wait for our summer content, because our summer content needs to be different rabbit holes like this that we just go down and, like, call up people that we know that would know what we're talking about here. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This is amazing. Cool. So wait. Scored 18 goals, 48 assists through 63 games with the New Westminster Royals while coaching them? No, he got the head coaching job the next year.
Ah, my bad. I can't read.
No, it's okay. He scored so much that they were like, dude, you got to run this thing.
Still, 37 points in 59 games coaching. That's pretty good.
That's amazing. Who was the last player coach is what I want to know. Like, I don't know. And not just like I played and then I got bad at the game, or not bad at the game, but like I wasn't in the lineup, so they let me coach, because there was a lot of those. Those have happened a lot. But like active, okay, I'm on the ice, I'm also putting in our lineup and calling line changes.
I have no idea. You'd have to go back a long time, I think.
Summer content, baby. We'll figure it out. I love this. This is great. Yeah, man. I don't know.
For the NHL anyway.
Yeah, for the NHL.
It'd be a while, I imagine.
He finished out with the Tacoma Rockets, who did not give him the head coaching job. But then he went back and coached the New Westminster Royals right after that. That was his last season of play. Okay, little Walter Babe Pratt history. And someone out there is going to know more. Oh, here we go. This one from Irvin Claveria. Babe Pratt died in Pacific Coliseum during a game. See, that's not on his Hockey DB page. Now I got to find out more. Do the anyone else read? You got time to pull it up, because I'm going to Google this, because I want to know more about this.
It's now time for Anyone Else, presented by DoorDash. It's our listeners' chance to get involved and hit us up in the YouTube live chat. And it's also our listeners' chance to get 25% off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when they download the DoorDash app and enter code NATION25. I did that all off the top of my head. I'm finding the last line here. Offer valid in Canada, subject to change. Terms apply. I wanted to see if I could do the entire read without finding the script. About 90% of the way there.
Don't know how this didn't click. I really don't, because I know this story. Like, I know this story. You know this story, too. As soon as I read it out loud, you're going to feel like a dummy. Because we were looking at a Hockey DB page, trying to figure out, what's the significance here? Listen to this. He worked as an analyst, Walter Babe Pratt we're talking about, worked as an analyst for CBC's Hockey Night in Canada telecast from Vancouver in the 1970s and served as a goodwill ambassador of the Vancouver Canucks. Pratt died of a heart attack in the media lounge of the Pacific Coliseum in Vancouver during the first intermission of a Canucks game on December 16th, 1988. The Canucks honored Pratt's memory by stitching Babe on their sweaters for the remainder of the hockey season. 72 years old, he passed away. How neither of us remembered this, I don't know, because I have seen the jerseys with the Babe thing, and I looked it up. I was like, why was Babe on any of those jerseys? Why was it stitched? And that's why. I don't know how that didn't click. But anyways, if you want us to dissect anybody else's Hockey DB page, let us know. There's something in the rink named after him, too.
I think you're right.
Not a banner day for us today. But a lot of people didn't know this. And I'm sure as soon as I said it, the way I remember it is, why was Babe on the jerseys? And I remember looking it up ages ago, and that's why. Yeah, this is interesting. A lot of people didn't know this. Yeah, this is great. It's good stuff. Okay. Yeah, Nar, just ask Don Taylor. Anything you just know, just ask Don Taylor. Yeah, Don Taylor would know. Okay, you already did the anyone else read. Let's get to some questions from the YouTube live chat. I've got this one, Grady. Can you pull it up? This one from our old pal, still a pal, but it doesn't work for Canucks Army anymore. Noah Strang, who is at Canucks practice today with me, and he tweeted this out. There was a documentary crew, it looked like there were some cameras, and Noah confirmed that these cameras and this big microphone were filming Quinn Hughes. And we talked about it recently. We found out that Amazon's going to be following 12 NHL players around and making like a docu-series. And off air, you and I joked a lot about which Canuck would they least want to follow. And we were talking about like Nils Amon, Philip Hronek, just the quietest guys on the team. And they chose Quinn Hughes. They didn't go with our pick of Philip Hronek or Nils Amon. They went with Quinn Hughes, it looks like. And Quinn Hughes, it looks like at least, is going to be one of the 12 players in this Amazon docuseries. And I think they might have just been getting B-roll, but I didn't know who they were until I saw this tweet. But like today I was at practice and Quinn did a scrum, so that was getting filmed. But then I went off to talk to Petey, who's at the other side of the locker room. And I'm sitting down with Elias and we're just chatting. We were just having a conversation. We're having a conversation about stick flex as we typically do. He's down to 87 if people are curious. I'm not going to write it, but we were just having a conversation. I asked him about a couple things, and then I just noticed these guys come over and just start filming us. And I was like, oh, so maybe I'll be in an Amazon docuseries. But I, yeah, so I don't know. Maybe it's just B-roll of like, look at the Canucks locker room. Look at how reporters do things.
Well, also, I imagine you collect so much footage so that you have B-roll for any type of scenario.
Yeah,
or
exactly.
Like situation or storyline that might emerge, right?
I'm just glad I wore my nice polo today.
Yeah, there you go.
We both have been to the rink and we're not dressed our best. But like, I'm Amazon documentary ready. I hope the editor sits down and looks at that B-roll and says, whoa, get that guy.
Oh,
in my
do they allow kid reporters? Is this like a Make-A-Wish?
The narrator, Make-A-Wish. The narrator's like, the junior reporter. Oh, man. And you know what? It was one of those interviews where I went up, because you know how sometimes you stand and talk to a player, but the seat next to Elias was open, and he was like, yeah, sit down if you want. And I was like, perfect, I'll sit. So I was sitting talking to him, so we were both facing forward. That's good B-roll right there.
Yeah, let's go.
Over under, Karen Versation. Over under on quad stick flex would be 55.5. Over. I liked a stick. I liked a stiff stick when I played. You know what I played with one year? Was I was playing, we had high school ball hockey. And in grade 12, I played as a forward. Usually I was in net. Played as a forward. And I was like, okay, what do I really need this for? All my other sticks were like too small. The composite ones get like, got like, you know, I played in the driveway a lot as well. Really, the blades were just too thin. So like, what am I going to do? I went to Sport Check and I bought like a Sherwood 5030, like a wood, all wood stick.
Really?
Yeah. And I played with this wood stick and I used the Canada flag hockey tape on it. And it was like, it was hilarious. I was literally just playing because it was like, okay, this is a fun thing to do in high school. You know, I'm a senior. I'm just going to play. It'll be a lot of fun. And yeah, I used a Sherwood 5030. So no, I'm not a big stick flex guy. Myself. I love this though. Okay, this is an actual hockey question from Corey Anderson. Should the Canucks change PP1 to have Joshua at net front with the four other mainstays on the power play and move Garland back to power play two? I say, and this is a listener question. I say you leave this power play the way it's going right now. I like the look. And they were practicing again at practice today. Same formation, no real surprise there. I've liked what we've seen from them lately.
Yeah, and the second power play they had in the Edmonton game, they were really close to scoring in that first minute. After Edmonton got the clear, that's when, okay, then it was maybe difficult to enter the zone and get set up. But once they were actually set up, they were generating some looks. And over the last handful of games, they have been getting man advantage goals. So I don't think you need to tinker with PP1 right now.
Okay, this one from Karen Versation as well. Do you think management regrets the Lindholm trade? Fans seem split, and I think there are cases to be made both ways. I'm going to say no, they don't regret it. Do they hope there would be a better fit with Pettersson? Do they hope that it would have been a more offensive upside in the trade? Like, do they hope for that? Yeah, maybe. I think you have to wait till playoffs. And I also think the defensive impact he's made. And again, when he was out, we saw the negative impact it had on the penalty kill. And as soon as he got back, we saw the positive impact it had on the penalty kill. I know Kuzmenko's scoring goals. He's shooting at like 27% again, but the defensive impact for Elias Lindholm matters a lot.
Yeah, regret is too strong of a word when we haven't even seen him in the playoffs yet, because down the stretch for the Canucks doesn't really matter. Plus, you now have the context that he was playing through a wrist injury before he, of course, missed some games to let it heal a little bit better. Yeah, they're going to want more offense. Yeah, they're going to hope that that there's more overall impact than he's provided to this point. But regret is way too strong of a word when we haven't even seen him in the playoffs yet, which is when you acquired Elias Lindholm to be a difference maker come postseason time. That's when the impact of having another legit top nine forward is something that you hoped could put you over the top. That hasn't been put to the test yet.
Yeah, that's what it comes down to. That's ultimately what it comes
down to. Imagine
the
reverse, right? Imagine he looked great down the stretch. Goes to sleep in the playoffs. People would be looking down at that trade.
BC Buds, I bet he scores in the playoffs. Although he may have been talking about Ilya Mikheyev, which is a bold take.
And even now, like, again, in that Edmonton game, this Lindholm, Garland, Joshua line, I feel a lot more comfortable now about third line and the Canucks being able to have at least one more strong line behind the top six compared to when Lindholm was out, right? It was the Miller line, it was Pettersson line.
Yeah.
And then the bottom six felt like an unproductive mess. Whereas now, whether it's in a defensive checking role or hopefully providing some secondary offense, it feels like this current iteration of the third line, Lindholm, Joshua, Garland,
yeah,
can actually be an X factor for the Canucks in the playoffs.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, I should mention this as well. The Greta event on the 18th, we're pivoting it, folks. We're pivoting it to playoff watch party. We don't know the exact date because we don't have the NHL playoff schedule yet, but we're pivoting that to a watch party during the away games that are happening. So stay tuned for that. Karen or Karn, post your Amazon doc question because I missed it somewhere. Because we're a little light on anyone else's today, folks. Get your anyone else's in because we're going to have to keep talking. All right, let's go down a rabbit hole of a Hockey DB rabbit hole. Let's see Fred J. Hume. Let's look him up. Although that's the thing. I don't want to just look at their Hockey DB page because then we're trying to figure out impact. And then you're like, oh, they were an ambassador for the team. And oh, they died in Pacific Coliseum. And then you feel like an ass for not knowing that off the top of your head. Fred J. Hume doesn't have a Hockey DB page.
I think we should
prep.
Yeah, this isn't something we should be doing on the fly like this.
Oh, he was a mayor of Vancouver. Bad mayor. Doesn't even have a Hockey DB page.
What is show prep, eh?
As UBC's first and only athletics historian, Fred Hume brings the story of kinesiology alumni to life. This is special page on UBC's website. He entered the UBC Sports Hall of Fame.
The More You Know, brought to you by Harmon Dial.
I'm going to say that's another one you can rename. I don't know, former mayor.
Well, let's hold on. That'd be some crazy backstory.
Yeah, it's like, he ran into a building and saved four children that were going to die in a fire. He saved them all. And I'm like, rename it. I like Dakota Joshua for that one.
The Yannick Hansen. Yeah, we're like, let's rename it the Yannick Hansen Award. And it's like, let's hold off on that.
All right. Yeah. This is great. Okay, this is great. Corey Anderson, we'll close it on this one. Oh, no, we actually have a few. Sorry, I looked up. Okay. Is there anyone, this one from Jeremy Lee, anyone in the AHL that you can foresee being a factor in the playoffs? I don't know about that. I don't know if you're talking about Canucks specifically, but Adam Gaudette just scored his 44th goal in the AHL this year. Did you see that?
I saw that, yeah.
Dude's probably going to win the AHL MVP award. I wonder if he gets another look at the NHL level.
How old is he now? Is he like 25?
I would assume 25. No, he's got to be like 28 now.
Really?
27. He's going to be 28 next season. Oh, like I'm so far off.
No.
28 next year. Blues ain't making the playoffs, so he's not making
the impact.
It feels
like he was drafted just like, and we were talking about him as a hotshot prospect just like not that long ago, you know?
Yeah. And then he played Warzone with us, and then he got traded. He had the Canucks convo curse.
I love
good Warzone player though.
Rockstar vibes with the 44 goals and 25 assists.
Dude, totally. I'm so happy for him. I unapologetically talk about how much I like Adam Gaudette. Not just because he played video games with us. And let's remember that was for charity. It wasn't like he just hopped on with the boys. Like, no, I like Adam Gaudette. It's like how I like Jack Rathbone, who also played in that charity Warzone game that we put on.
A team like San Jose should roll the dice on him.
Yeah.
Like,
totally.
How much worse are you going to get? By the way, did you see the quote from their netminder after he...
I did.
That was
did
awesome.
Did you want to bring it up?
Yeah.
Yeah, bring it up.
So this is Devin Cooley. Post-game, and it was taken a little bit out of context, but I'm trying to find the exact quote. Can you stall for a bit here?
That's my best ability. Okay, I'll rapid fire some of these. Yeah, Captain Canucks asking if Demko is going to play both games or just Calgary. So obviously the Canucks play against Calgary tomorrow. Winnipeg on Thursday. They're on the road for that game. I think you have to give them both of those games, because I would argue that not so much rust turns into rest, but or no, rest turns into rust, excuse me. Not so much that, but just the fact that he's been off for so long that I would not want his first game to be against Calgary Flames and his second game to be almost a week later against whoever the Canucks play in the first round. I think you're best suited to giving him both of those starts. I would start Thatcher Demko for both of those games, personally. Captain Canuck, who asked that question. All right, Karen, which NHL star would be most boring for the Amazon documentary, and who do you want to see in the documentary? Look, I want to see Quinn Hughes. I'm excited to see Quinn Hughes. I think we're biased, but most boring in my mind, it has to be like Philip Hronek or Nils Amon.
Yes.
But around the whole league, like, who's more boring? And again, we don't know.
We wouldn't know
in the locker room. It's yeah.
It's one of those things where you have, yeah, like you said, you have to be in the locker room and get to know.
And Philip Hronek doesn't like talking to media. Like, yeah, Philip Hronek, and look, this is nothing about these guys personally. It's just that they are very quiet, especially, you know, when we're having conversations with them. Jonathan Lekaramaki is another one. We played his audio a couple weeks ago when I went out to Abbotsford to chat with him. And the advice I got was, if you give him a yes or no question, he will take the option and he will give you a yes or no as an answer.
Yeah.
I would love a documentary where they're just like, what's it like living in Vancouver? Yeah, it's pretty good. Where do you like to go for walks? Yeah, around.
That's good. I'm not picky.
No, I'm not picky. Yeah, anywhere's fine.
It rains a lot.
Yeah, okay. Guys talk about the rain. Hasn't rained that much. I'm not a big fan of the rain.
My dog doesn't like the rain.
Okay, sorry. You ready?
Yeah, so this is Devin Cooley, Sharks goalie. A few days ago, had an amazing 49 save performance for San Jose. And the quote that went viral was, nothing's really going to matter. We're all going to die, you know? And people were making a bunch of jokes about, look what the Sharks have already done to this guy. But if you look at the full context of what he said, it's actually a pretty impressive perspective and state of mind to have for a goaltender, where the mental side of the game is huge. And it's actually something that that kind of makes a little bit of sense. And this is a full quote. He was asked about if he was taking a peek at the shot total during the third period, because again, made 49 saves. And he said, I check it every once in a while, but yeah, again, I just try to stay present in the stay in the present moment. I keep repeating myself. Like, there are no thoughts. There is no future. I just say that over and over again. So that way I could just look at it one save at a time. Then I also say, nothing matters. Nobody cares. Nothing matters. So it keeps me grounded. Like, if I make a big save, or if I look up and I'm like, wow, a goal on 40 shots or whatever, I'm like, I feel good, but nobody cares, you know? Nothing's really going to matter. We're all going to die. It sounds a little grim, but it helps keep me grounded. And again, it sounds nihilistic, but actually, speaking of reading, I've read a book called Tuesdays with Maury. It's about college professor.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you've read that too?
No. Okay. But I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
It's basically, a storied college professor is about to pass away, and he passes along life lessons to a former student who at the time was also a sports journalist, funny enough. And that book sort of preaches a sort of similar concept as sort of one of the lessons, or at least makes you think about how philosophically, if you keep the fact that we're all going to die, and it's so obvious, but you actually keep that in mind on a day-to-day perspective, you start worrying less and actually living. And so the quote itself sounds depressing, but I get what Devin Cooley is saying, where it's not about taking the nihilistic view. It's about realizing that in the grand scheme of things, the example he gave was, if we were up 4-0 and the other team comes back and we lose the game, right? Like, yeah, that sucks, but in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't really matter. For a goaltender, that's a really good mindset to have to help you reset during moments when you're struggling.
Bang on. Hank Azaria. You know Hank Azaria, right?
I don't.
Have you watched Friends? The show Friends?
No, I didn't really. I obviously know the main.
You know The Simpsons?
I've seen couple. Yeah.
You know Apu from The Simpsons?
Yeah.
That's Hank Azaria. Hank Azaria is in the Tuesdays with Maury movie.
Oh,
yeah,
no
he
way.
Plays the sports writer.
Oh, I didn't even know that was a movie.
Yeah.
Just read the book like a couple weeks ago.
I actually only knew the movie. I didn't know the book.
Wow.
So there we go. With both of our brain cells together, all two of them, we got a full thought. Okay. This is great. Yeah, anything else? Okay, people were asking about, people were asking about the Canucks' last fight. When was the Canucks' last fight? Do you know it off the top of your head, do you think?
Was it Miller standing up for Pettersson?
Yeah, that's the last one I can remember as well. But before that, was it like Zadorov? Because I think it was the Zadorov versus Liam O'Brien is what I think. I'm going to check our friends at hockeyfights.com. They keep a log of everything. It was Josh Manson and Nikita Zadorov. But yeah, they've gone a month. Like, so it was Connor Garland versus Brandon Tanev, which wasn't much of a fight. You remember that one?
Yeah.
On the 22nd of February. Then it was Manson versus Zadorov on March 13th. And then Miller versus Jack McBain on April 3rd.
Yeah, especially once Joshua went down with injury and you know that you've got a playoff spot locked up and the playoffs are what really matter.
Yeah.
Unless somebody takes a massive run at Quinn Hughes or Elias Pettersson, you don't want your players, especially key guys, to be dropping gloves and risking injury.
There were 34 fights last year, 18 this year for the Canucks.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Kyle Burrows left, Luke Shen.
Burrows and Luke Shen were 1-2 on leading the team in fights last year. And hey, I would say the Canucks are tougher to play against this year. And also, no disrespect to Kyle Burrows, and definitely not to Luke Shen, who could kick my ass. Kyle Burrows could as well. But no disrespect to those guys, but like, I'm a lot more scared of Nikita Zadorov if I'm an opposing player than I am of like Kyle Burrows. I'm leaving Luke Shen out of that.
Yeah, well, tough to play against in today's NHL means something totally different than it did like 15 years ago, right? Because you've actually got to be able to play, and Mike Babcock would talk about how it's about functional toughness. It's how difficult is it to win net front battles against you, right? Especially come playoff time, where everybody talks about how the offense is going to come in greasy areas around the blue paint. So how tough is it to get around Carson Soucy, Nikita Zadorov, even Tyler Myers, right? That's what tough to play against sort of means. And if you tack on the ability to throw open ice checks on top of that, you don't need to necessarily fight to be a tough team. And I think this version of the Canucks is a pretty good example of that. Because again, when Burrows and Shen, when we found out that they were leaving, and we didn't know at the time, of course, that they were going to sign Soucy and of course add Zadorov, especially when you looked at the forward group, you thought, okay, is this a lighter group? Are they going to be a team that you can kind of push around? And that's not been the case at all, which is another positive sign heading into the playoffs that we're not even having this discussion of, oh, are the Canucks going to be a team that heavier teams can push around? And it's a positive.
Okay, this one from Captain Canuck. We're going to close it on this. Zadorov is big, but he can't throw a proper punch. I know what I'm talking to Zadorov at the next practice.
Yeah, he's not...
Let me show you how to throw a punch, Nikhil.
He's kind of right, though, right? He's not a fighter or enforcer in the typical sense, but when you're that massive, most guys don't want to risk
anyway. You can punch like this, which is what he was doing to Liam O'Brien. And for those in the podcast, I'm turning my fist open and I'm coming down because that's how he punched Liam O'Brien. And he hurt Liam O'Brien. Like, that didn't feel good for Liam O'Brien.
Liam O'Brien, it feels like the couple times that the Canucks played Arizona, he was angry after every shift for no particular reason.
First
just
ballot,
running around.
First ballot Hall of Fame crybaby, for sure.
Yeah. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Palm strikes. Jeremy Lee, palm strikes. It is a variation of palm strikes sometimes when Zadorov punches. But anyways, maybe he does have to punch down just because he's so tall. It's kind of like how I only throw uppercuts involuntarily. Okay, we'll close it out there. For my co-host, Harmon Dyler, and technical producer, Grady Sass, my name is Dave Wardrelli. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Canucks Conversation. Canucks Conversation with Harmon and Quads, brought to you by the Toyota BZ4X. The BZ4X's fresh look is just an added bonus to its range, since you can drive up to 406 kilometers on a single charge. That's enough to get you from Kitsilano to Whistler or Kamloops to Kelowna and back, and still be home in time for the game. Now that's what we'd call electric. The best part, by choosing electric, you can get up to $11,000 in rebates and incentives. The BZ4X are in stock and selling quickly, so make sure to visit shoptoyota.ca or your local Pacific Toyota dealer to get your hands on one. Canucks Conversation is live Monday through Friday, every weekday at 2 p.m. over on the Canucks Army YouTube channel. Make sure you like, subscribe, and interact in the YouTube live chat every day with us, folks.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.